Matt, your spring so far has been gone pretty much according to plan. What was your goal coming in this spring?
Yeah, you know, my main goal is to get ready for the season. So I want to build up, you know, get my 2 innings, 3 innings, 4 innings, 5 innings, 6 innings in. Just build up, you know, as normal as I could going into spring, or coming into spring, getting through spring, and then getting into the season. Just build up normal pitch count.
Matt Cute, last year was a crazy year for you, you know. Could you talk about just what it was like? What was going through your head when you got hurt? You were pitching so well. Things were rolling out perfectly for you, and then it's a complete freak injury, the ACL. Like, what was going through your head?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a lot of different emotions over that, you know, short period of time. Obviously, when it first happened, I mean, just being completely honest, just kind of like devastation, you know what I mean? In the moment, I knew something not really good happened. I was hoping it was like a knee sprain. That's what in my head where I was hoping, but I feel like deep down I knew it was something else. And then, you know, a short time after that, we found out what it really was, but... Man, there's a devastation, and then, you know, once you kind of assess what happened, you kind of cool down from the shock of, like, man, like, this just happened. It's when you start getting into fight mode, you know, you start your rehab, you fight through it, you get mentally strong, physically strong, and you move forward.
I know you've talked about this a little bit, but being away from a team, it's tricky emotionally, isn't it? And I know you came and you spent time with the team during the year, even though you couldn't play, but... What's it like to be part of a team and not part of a team?
That's really difficult. It's something that you, as baseball players, we love playing this game. We love the competition. We love being around our guys, our teammates. You know, it's all the camaraderie you build, the friendships you build. So when it gets taken away from you, you know, in that sense, like I said, it's out of your control. So you got to fight through it. But it's really tough not being around the team when you know you're supposed to be. Like, it's in season. You know you're supposed to be with the team. And when you're not, it's hard. But like I said, you just find ways to mentally get strong and stay strong and be stronger for it and get through it.
Matt, it's always seemed to me that professional athletes, really good professional athletes, are at their heart are optimists, right? Because tomorrow's going to be better. I mean, you hear it in every sport. How hard is it to maintain a sense of optimism, you know, when you've had a career where you've had injuries and everybody says your stuff is good, but... As Steven pointed out, it was a freak injury last year. It was not pitching related.
Yeah, you know, it's just part of my story. You know, I got to add that to part of my story. When I talk to groups of kids, you know, my faith in God gets me through everything, which is great. It just keeps me strong. With that being said, like I said, I've had some freak injuries, and those are out of my control. You know, whether it's, you know, getting hit in the head, ACL, had a random, you know, not random. I guess it is random, I guess, the pronator tendon, you know, tear. Stuff that they don't even see in baseball players. Just some freak things, but like I said, as a result of it, you've got to find, like you said, overall, I mean, definitely you got to be an optimist, because that's what keeps you mentally strong. That's definitely a trick to help you stay mentally strong. But when you're optimistic, you know, like I said, everything's going to be better. It's going to be better. We're going to get better. The team's going to get better. I'm going to get better individually. When you view stuff that way, it just makes life easier too. Like, it's just more positive light, and there's definitely some strength behind that.
With the balance of probabilities, you are due for some good luck. I would like to point that out. I don't want to curse you here, Matt. I'll knock on whatever this is. Not wood, but whatever it is, right? Yeah, maybe you're due. You were ARB eligible for this team. This, you know, you guys settled on a 1-year deal in the end, right? Matt, was there any talk back and forth at all about doing anything longer than that? Was the team interested in extending, or are you interested in extending?
Yeah, you know, I don't know how much detail we can get into it, but personally, I love it here. I've told them that. I've told the guys that. I tell my teammates that. It's a great city, great baseball city, great baseball organization. I love the teammates in this clubhouse. I see where this team is going, and it's very exciting. And I think we all see that. Well, we all know that. We all believe, like, hey, we're going to go out and do some great things. But, yeah, definitely on our end, there's definitely an interest to be here long term. You know, so hopefully, you know, as I said, that being aside from, hey, the actual baseball, like baseball, I'm, you know, just go out there and you focus every day on what your job is. But in regards to that question, yeah, I mean, I would definitely like to be here long term.
You talked about kind of the seeing what's coming here in terms of this organization. What are you – the birds are descending on us here now, too. This is great. This is a real live interview outdoors. What are you seeing around you, like last spring, but especially this spring, Matt?
Yeah, you know, the veteran leadership, the young talent and leadership. You know, some of these young guys, you could tell they're leaders, which is awesome. It just helps the clubhouse and helps us win on the field. Like I said, the leadership qualities with the talent in every single guy. Like I said, it's incredible to see, you know, knowing what we can go out there and do as a team and as individuals. If we take care of our job, we're going to go out there, you know, be prepared, perform well, and as a team perform well, and have a lot of fun doing it. But like I said, we all see the talent we have here, and the quality of people we have here, which to me, like I said, when you have quality people, it helps teams win. It really does. So with that, yeah, it just looks like it's going to be really exciting.
When you have a team with, you know, a mix of cultures, which this team has with Japanese pitcher, Korean pitcher, a lot of countries, Charlie's talked about you being a leader. The players have talked about you being a leader. How do you be a leader in a situation where you're dealing with people with, you know, various viewpoints, different cultural backgrounds, different ideas about what they have to do to get ready? I don't know, maybe different ideas of what constitutes success. How do you deal with that?
You know, that's what makes people, I think, great and just be better as players and ultimately be better as people, is you talk to people. You have conversations. You know, I'm a big guy. Obviously, our phones are great tools, right? But when guys are actually talking to people and don't have faces in their phones all day, it's like you learn about people, you learn about your teammates, you learn about their family life, you learn about their baseball life. And then culturally, like you said, when I'm talking to Ryu and Shun, just talking about different things they do as pitchers and how they approach things and how's that going to get me better. And they're asking me questions about certain things I do, about how they can get better potentially. And when we all do that, and pitchers talking with hitters, like usually, you know, overall, good teams talk to everyone, right? But, you know, pitchers stay with pitchers, hitters stay with hitters. But, like, daily, us pitchers are talking with the hitters and vice versa about different approaches and different things that they're doing in the box when we're pitching and what are we looking for when they're hitting. And that's just getting us all better on that bigger scale of, like, hey, let's go out there and play. And everybody's learning from each other. So going forward, it's incredible to see that communication. And like I said, with blending the cultures and everybody has similar yet very different programs, when everybody just talks about, you know, what they do, what gives them success, and guys can take pieces of each person to get themselves better, that's the sky's the limit.
I'm going to ask you this. You've got a guy in Nate Pearson who wants to throw 110. You've got a guy in Hyunjin Ryu who's, wants, you know, he can make 73 look really good. How does a guy like Pearson take stuff from a guy like Ryu?
So, like, just your approach in pitching. So, I mean, you got to know, and this is, like I said, you asked the question, so it's like guys like Pearson who can throw 100-plus, it's insane talent. It's incredible talent. You go out there and you pitch and you can, you know, blow guys away. And then, you know, different guys, like you said, we're talking about Ryu, how you can make 73 look really good. It just, when you learn as a pitcher, and I believe this, you know, so believe this, is changing hitters' timing. You mess up hitters' timing and you're in and around the zone, you're going to be successful. So that's where, like I said, if you got 100, you got 110, you got 70 miles an hour. When you blend any of that together and then just realize, like, hey, this plays, that plays, this plays. But when you do it in a way where you're actually pitching, you're messing up hitter's timing. You're locating. You're, like I said, I know I keep saying messing up hitter's timing because it's such a big thing. But locating, changing your tempo, different things. All those things as a pitcher, it directly relates to success, because if a hitter's on time, they might be more successful. If the hitter's timing's messed up, you're going to be more successful. So that's why it's great to just have a good mix, and being able to throw fastballs and off-speed for strikes, it's an incredible tool to have.
How do the catchers fit into that? You got especially here, you're working with some young catchers, guys who are, you know, young major leaguers. But how do they fit into that conversation around pitching?
I'm glad you asked that, because I tell guys all the time, it's like, listen, you need to just drill this home. Like, your pitcher-catcher relationship is one of the most important things you're going to have in this game. Because when you guys are on the same page, when we're on the same page as the catcher's on the same page as us, and you go out there and attack your game plan that you already have discussed, with obviously some changes and alterations here and there, you execute that way more often than not. So having that preparation, and like I said, whether it's, you know, veteran catchers or young catchers, when you communicate and you say, hey, this is what I like to do, this is what I'm doing well, these are my weapons. As a catcher, hey, what do you guys see that can get me better? You know, as mechanically, like my release point, a certain pitch sequence, all those things. Like I said, I mean, we could talk for hours about this, but like the whole picture is like you have this communication, you have these relationships with the guys. And like, listen, as a pitcher and catcher, if you're on the same page and you guys have a game plan and you know how you can help each other, like, hey, set up here as a catcher. I want you to set up a little bit further there because it's going to be more plate. Or the catcher says, hey, like, drive at me a little bit more because you're just falling off a little bit. All those little things directly relate to success. You know, I definitely, that's...
How did there was, and again, there's still mound visits, but the restriction on mound visits, does that change? in terms of the amount of prep, the amount of communication you have to have between innings, before games, between games, because you might, you know, maybe there's one fewer or two fewer times when the guy actually can walk out and talk to you, or Pete can walk out and talk to you.
I would say maybe a little, and if a little, very little. Like I said, if you have that preparation and communication there, then, you know, hopefully you never need mountain visits, but every now and then people do. We all do. Whether it's to give us a break or to discuss something or a certain hitter. The restriction on mountain visits is kind of its own little, in my, you know, opinion, nitpicky thing. But since there is a restriction, like you said, you just have more communication. If it's a guy who you're going to have a lot of mountain visits with, just maybe be prepared a little bit more to have the communication beforehand, so you're not getting up to the mountain visit limit, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Major League Baseball, of course, has put a focus on speeding up the game, and it seems to me they're focusing a lot on the pitchers, right? Can't use this to get grip on the ball. You know, can't do that. Now you have to face three batters minimum. Got to speed up your delivery. Can't take time. It seems like it's pretty much focused on one position here. How much is too much, I guess, is what I'm asking you.
I think we've already passed the too much phase, but some of that is out of our control. That's, like you said, just to, I guess, start off, like, when you can learn to control what you can control, you're going to be better for it. So first off, you got to control what you can control, and don't worry about stuff you can't control. With that being said, I'm glad you said it, because obviously you're talking to a pitcher, so I may sound biased, even though I feel like I'm a very unbiased opinion when I just look at the game of baseball.
But it is true.
Any outsider, when I say non-player, looks at, you know, pitchers or hitters or whatever. Everything MLB is doing is trying to help the hitter. They've said they're trying to do that, right? Because they want to increase offense, and they're trying to mess with, like, they want more guys to steal, like, all this stuff, right? Nothing to help the pitcher, right? It's all, hey, helping hitters, because they think, whether it's true or not, they think, oh, the fans want to see this, and they want to see this, so we're going to make it better for them. But side note, like, and this is, I'm glad we're talking about this, like, think about this. If we do anything to help the hitters, what happens? There's one direct effect. The game gets longer. If you help, I'm not asking you to help the pitchers, but that'd be great. Sure, help the pitchers. But it's logic. It's common sense. It's 100% factual. If you help the pitchers, I'm not asking for help. If you help the pitchers, the game will get shorter. If you help the hitters in any way, the game will get longer. It's just common sense. But that's where I don't believe the whole shorten the game thing, because all they want to do is, you know, increase offense, help the hitters, whatever you want to call it. But I just laugh about it, because just being realistic, if you do anything in that sense, the games will be longer. It just, that has to happen. If there's more offense, the game's longer. If there's quicker outs, the game's shorter. I mean, there's not much else to say other than that.
Are guys, and this may be a real detailed question here, but are guys figuring out what they can use to grip the baseball now? Pitchers, like, are guys trying different mixes?
Yeah.
You know?
That's probably a too detailed question to go in depth with, which I'm not going
to,
I guess, give you any detail.
No, not at all.
I'm not even going to touch on the subject. But I will touch on, so I'm a unique guy in the sense where, like, even, like, I know guys just, the majority of guys, like, so I'm just going to make up this is just making up a random number, say 95 out of 100 guys, if they use any type of grip, it's for grip, right? I know we're just having a fun conversation here, so I'll say it. So it's like, I know hitters don't want to believe this, but if 95 out of 100 pitchers use any type of sticky or grip, strictly for grip, that's the same as a hitter using pine tar on their bat for grip. Granted, there's going to be a couple guys who are trying to manipulate the pitch as a result of sticky or grip, which I agree, that shouldn't be in the game if you're going to try to go from your spin rate increases 50% as a result of pine tar or whatever they use. But like I said, just me, I don't like using, I've tried it in bullpens just to see, like, hey, what does any type of, you know, stickiness or anything do from a grip standpoint? I don't like it because I lose feel. So, like, I just in messing around in bullpens over the years, I mean, playing this game a long time, over the years, I'm like, I don't like anything. And I think a lot of guys are like that, where a lot of guys don't like anything because if you lose any type of feel, you may not know where the ball's going. Whereas some guys, they need the grip just to, hey, I know where the ball's going when I have some grip. Like I said, there's always just a couple outliers in any situation where, obviously we're talking about pitching, where maybe there might be a couple guys trying to manipulate a ball, make it move a different way. Whereas the large majority of guys are using it for grip. But I understand why it's illegal, and, you know, I get it.